Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's the House Water Committee, date of January 31st. We will open a subcommittee of the full committee until such time as other members are able to free up their schedule and get here. And on the agenda today, we have an overview of the State Marine Board by Don Heffner. Paul Don Heffner. I said Don Heffner.
Don's brother.
Excuse me. Before we invite Paul up to, do you have any announcements that are not on the material in front of us, or anything else for the good of the order, Sandy?
Not today, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
With that, Paul, if you would proceed with your testimony. Seems like you've been here before, usually on some kind of outboard motors or something, I'm recalling from past history of the... Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Paul Don Heffner, Director of the Marine Board. You asked me to present a brief overview of the agency, and so if I may, I'd like to use these flip charts to walk you through a little overview, and hopefully this will pick up the audio. Another.
The Marine Board, as you know, is the state voting agency. Our mission is to dedicated to safety, voter education, and public access while we try to protect the environment. Some fast facts about the agency: we were created by the legislature in 1959. We have a 5-member board appointed by the governor, 39 staff members located here in Salem. We serve about 190,000 registered boat owners who are our direct customers, and there's about another 500,000 non-motorized boats that also apply the waterways of the state. We provide services to them as well. Oregon ranks 26th in total boat registrations nationwide. We rank 28th in population, so you can see that boating is a popular sport here. And we have nearly 60 registered boats for every 1,000 persons. We are entirely fee-based with registration fees, motor boat fuel tax, and some federal funds. We receive no general fund support. We have 3 major program areas. These include administration and education, which are combined, in which we provide boat registration and titling services. We register outfitters and guides, about 1,200 of them. We license ocean charter boats, and this is where we have house our boating safety programs are within admin and education. We also have a significant marine law enforcement program and a boating facilities public access program. And I'll go into those in a little more depth. Within registration and titling services, we have 124 bonded agents statewide, and one of the bills that you will hear today has to do with the fee that the agents charge as a service fee. As I mentioned, 190,000 boats statewide. We also license or give title to about 2,300 floating homes and boathouses, mostly in the Portland area. We have just over 1,000 outfitters and guides, and there's also a bill today dealing with reciprocity on the Columbia River, which we're going to speak about. And then we issue events for marine events, races, regattas, things like that. Within administration, we also regulate the waterways of the state through administrative rules, setting speed limits, prohibitions on the use of motors, and other regulations. We do boating surveys, and this is where we have our support services as well. In the area of boating safety education, we are about halfway into the implementation of mandatory boater education. This year It rises to age 45 and under. We've issued over 90,000 voter education cards to date. I'm pleased to report to you that it's going very well. The public is complying at very high rates, and complaints are almost non-existent. So that program is being phased in. Next year it'll go up to age 50, then 60, and then it'll be fully implemented by 2008. But it's going very well.
Representative Further.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on the previous page, I had a quick question regarding waterway regulation rulemaking. Do you have any say at all in the navigability issue, or how do you get involved with that? Are you a party that makes comments? I know the Division of State Land, that's under your jurisdiction, but can you maybe address, since many voters end up dealing with a navigability issue, how you deal with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, we are involved in the question of public use of waterways. Some of the conflicts that occur between float boaters and landowners and different user types of conflicts. We followed that legislation very closely over the last several sessions. Part of the problem isn't so much ownership of the bottom, but management of those waterways. And that's where we think possibly our agency could play a role. The issue is funding. There's no funding directed towards law enforcement, public access, and education to reduce those kinds of conflicts.
And I just have a quick follow-up. Thank you. Is it then, if a river becomes navigable, is it your responsibility for the actual maintenance and enforcement? So DSL makes the findings, and then you would be responsible. Whose responsibility is it if it's? I know that only the bottoms are state lands, and then the others would be right-of-ways.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, we manage waterways statewide regardless of ownership or declarations of navigability. Many of the rivers where we have marine patrol and public access facilities have never been adjudicated as navigable. We manage them nonetheless.
And one last question.
Follow-up.
Where does that funding, thank you, Mr. Chair, where does that funding come from? Obviously, you're already having to do some management for those. And you're saying that there's no funding for law enforcement currently, so...
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, I may have misspoken somewhat. We do provide funding for law enforcement and public access on those areas where our customer base, which is the 200,000 registered boats, commonly carry on their activities. Many of the conflicts that I was referring to are on smaller waterways where it's primarily float boat use, or where motors are prohibited and the only use is by canoes and kayaks and rafts, and where many of the conflicts that give rise to discussions of navigability take place. We don't have a law enforcement presence in those waterways.
Representative Brown.
Thank you.
Where's the division point in when the boats that you license and that are registered with the Marine Board and documented commercial fishing boats, how do you determine, is there a size or activity or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, we issue titles to all motorboats and sailboats 12 feet and over. Documentation, which there's a third bill today dealing with that question. Documentation is a form of ownership that's done by the Coast Guard, and generally it applies to boats 6 tons and over, regardless of whether they're used for pleasure or used for commercial use. You can either be titled or documented. It's simply a matter of proving method of proving ownership.
Okay, so a day salmon trawler is probably licensed by the Marine Board then, as opposed to being documented by the Coast Guard?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, correct. If it's smaller, it probably is registered through us as a means of proving ownership.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Go ahead.
So, let's see. I mentioned the education program. We use a variety of techniques to try to educate and inform the public. We have an award-winning website. We do a number of publications, films, videos, and other means of trying to reach the public with our education and safety messages.
Mr. Chair. Representative Barner. Thank you. Could you tell us just a little bit about accident investigation and reporting? I noticed you were about to flip the page, and now...
I'm sorry, I didn't cover everything here. Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart. Anytime there's a boating accident involving injury beyond first aid or death, that accident is investigated. And we do that through our contracts with the county sheriffs or the Oregon State Police, depending on where it takes place. And we gather that information, and it's forwarded on to the Coast Guard into a national database of boating accidents. So they are investigated and recorded.
Does that include accidents on the whitewater rivers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnard, yes. Yeah. Any waterway of the state, any accident, motorized or non-motorized, that results in injury or fatality or significant property damage.
Thank you.
So those are some of the things that we do. We have signs and kiosks around the coast. One of the things we're going to be doing here in the next year is installing low-powered radios in cooperation with the Coast Guard. We're going to do a pilot project at Newport and Garibaldi to give boaters access to weather and bar crossing information when they launch at those areas. It's a new initiative we're doing with the Coast Guard.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dankfelder.
I'm sorry to ask another question, but it falls under the boating safety education, which is who is responsible for educating people, boaters, about tsunamis and what to do in a tsunami. And I guess, having been in Asia when the tsunami hit, it sort of came to my mind. And I understand you're not responsible for emergency planning authority, because I've actually worked on tsunami plans. But as far as educating boaters what to do in a tsunami, is there any information available for fishermen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dinkfelder, none that I'm aware of. It's not something that we have done in the past.
And the Coast Guard's, Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
You know, if the Coast Guard has it available that you might be, I mean, I'm just thinking it's something we should make available, especially to our fishing fleets, given that that's a lot of people are going to be affected by this.
It's not been on the radar screen up to now.
Talk about it.
Well, I would suspect that's probably going to be part of the tsunami warning task force meetings that they're setting up up and down the coast. My understanding, I've never been to a tsunami, but my understanding if you're out at the ocean, you might not even know that the tsunami passed underneath you. And it's probably greater danger to the boats in the harbor than it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, that's correct. However, if it depends on when the tsunami hits, obviously, and if the fleet is all in the harbor, and then, you know, what happens, or somebody coming back. So maybe you'll make sure that it gets addressed during the task force discussions. Thank you.
Okay. Then we'll move on to Marine Law Enforcement Safety Services. We do this through contracts with 32 county sheriffs as well as the Oregon State Police. They provide provide them with patrol boats, equipment, and training. They provide the on-water presence statewide. They also coordinate the installation of buoys and waterway markers. They enforce all the state boating laws and administrative rules. They assist us, work hand-in-hand with us on educating the public. It's not simply about enforcement. It's also a very, very big part of our education effort. And many of them conduct school and adult water safety education programs, particularly during the off-season. And then our third major program area, boating facilities construction. Here we provide financial assistance as well as technical assistance to local governments statewide, cities, counties, park districts, port districts. We work as well with state parks, the ODFW, and our federal partners, Forest Service and BLM, to provide public access statewide. We also provide grants for sewage pump-out stations and tie-up facilities under a couple of federal programs, the Clean Vessel Act and the Boating Infrastructure Grants Program. The types of projects include ramps, parking, docks, restrooms, and related types of facilities. The projects are statewide. We recently completed a six-year boating facilities plan that identifies $150 million worth of facility needs over the next 6 years. And we provide the technical and engineering assistance for these projects statewide. That's how our boating facilities program works. To give you some dimensions of boating, this gives you a breakdown. I apologize, you can see it on your handout, but the size of Oregon's boats, the vast majority of the boats in Oregon are less than 20 feet in length. This is not a big boat state. Most of them are, 85% of them are trailerable. They're very mobile. People use them to get around. There's about 30,000 that are 20 feet and over. If you went out to 26 feet and over, that number would really start to drop off the chart. So Oregon is not a big boat state. I mention this in part because I know there have been discussions about the break that boaters receive supposedly on property tax. Registration is in lieu of personal property tax on boaters. Some people characterize it as that they're people with luxury boats are not paying a tax, but the fact is that the vast majority of boats in the state are small boats. They're not your yachts. So give you a perspective on that. In terms of propulsion, 63% are outboard powered, 33% inboard powered, the rest are sail and other. And then in terms of non-float boats, there's 500,000 float boats in the state, 40% raft, 20% kayaks, 15% canoes, 12% drift boats, and 13% some other type.
Excuse me, Don. On the luxury boats or in that category, you mentioned it's not a big issue because numbers are small. Exactly what are we looking at, though, in terms of out-of-state registration of luxury boats in the state of Oregon?
Mr. Chairman, we only register boats that are principally used in Oregon. The 190,000 boats that we have are Oregon boats.
I understand. But many of those boats that are used in Oregon still are out-of-state ownership of. Is that not true?
Mr. Chairman, when a person registers a boat here, they have to declare Oregon as their state of principal use. Now, if they live in Vancouver, Washington, and they moor their boat at Hayden Island, they can say that without any problem. But if they're from Florida and they want to register their boat in Oregon, they have to declare that Oregon is indeed their state of principal use. We don't just...
But that's principal use. That's not...
Principal use.
Place of their residency.
Doesn't have to be the place of their residence.
So, therefore, someone from California could register their boat in Oregon, albeit Florence or Hayden Island, without being in any violation of Oregon laws. Is that correct?
Well, they would have to swear that Oregon was their state of principal use.
Yes. Yeah.
If the boat never comes to Oregon, they would be making a false statement. We routinely turn over lists to neighboring states such as California of people that claim Oregon as a state of principal use but have a California address. And then the California Department of Revenue frequently will pay those people a visit to determine if indeed the boat is in Oregon or in California and go after it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crocker.
How many are 26, or let's just say 30 feet and over? Do you have that off the top of your head?
I don't have it off the top of my head. It's probably in the 8 to 15,000 range.
Thank you. Let me just follow up the comment, because if I own a 12-foot skiff, I'm not living a luxurious life, probably. I'm just out there paddling around a little bit. So thank you for allowing you to editorialize.
Okay. Moving ahead. This gives you some picture of where we are in terms of the trend on registration. Registrations peaked in 98, and they were flat for a number of years. And then there was a fee increase last year, and so we've seen a dip to the current level. This is despite quite a robust growth in new boats, but old boats are going off the rolls faster than new boats are coming into the system. So that's why it's been relatively flat here for the last several years. And we've tried to survey people as to why that is. There's no single reason. It's everything from a lack of time to a lack of money. Different reasons for different people, health, and other issues.
Representative Pinkham.
Thank you. I just have a question on. Obviously, it's not. Is it just motorized boats that are required to register? Or is it by size? What's the criteria?
All motorboats and sailboats 12 feet and over.
12 feet and over. Okay.
Chair, St. Bernard. This is a follow-up clarification. I think you said all motorboats, comma.
And sailboats.
And sailboats 12 feet or over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all motorboats.
All motorboats.
Thank you.
Okay. So jet skis would fall. Clarification, sir. So jet skis, which are under 12 feet, would fall in that category. Thank you.
Okay, I wanted for the, since this is the Water Committee and you're interested in water, not simply boats, I thought I would describe for you a few of the things that we're doing in terms of sustainable boating activities to try to protect water quality and make boating compatible. I mentioned the Clean Vessel Act. We've installed we've installed 44 pump outs and 48 waste dump stations. Statewide to collect sewage. Last year, these stations collected over 340,000 gallons of waste. We also provide grants for public restrooms and boating facilities, and in the last 6 to 8 years, we've been providing floating restrooms at some of the larger lakes and reservoirs statewide. We have 19 of those at last count, and they generated another 20,000 gallons of human waste that otherwise might have gone into the waterway. We are working to promote the use of EPA-compliant low-emission outboard engines, and most of the engines being sold today are compliant with 2006. We're promoting best management practices to prevent the spread of invasive species by boaters on boats, motors, and trailers. We're encouraging.
Can you help me promote best management practices? What does that mean? What activities are you involved in this prevention of the spread of invasive species?
Mr. Chairman, we're involved in trying to educate boaters about the issue overall of you know, the fact that they are a possible source of transporting this, what to do to avoid being a host for transporting stuff, the types of things that boaters can do to ensure that they don't transport this stuff, such as washing down their boat, being sure that you know they don't relaunch it while it's still got weeds and other types of things like that hanging off the engine or the trailer. What some of these species look like, other tips and pointers on ways to prevent the spread.
Do we have any provisions or any work with out-of-state luxury boats, ocean-going, private luxury boat sort of things to prevent them from bringing the creepy crawlies in from the Bay Area or wherever it happens to be?
Mr. Chairman, there's no formal program in Oregon of inspection or prohibition. Some states have outlawed the bringing of them in and mandated inspections. Oregon has not done that.
Inspections, of course, which would cost us money. which also might cost us a lot more money if we didn't do it. It's kind of a rock and hard place.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shoffler.
I want to go back one, too, just for, I know we discussed this quite a bit 2 years ago, but the compliance with the EPA and the low-emission engines, by 2006, that means that all engines sold will have to comply, but not all engines in use, or all engines in use will have to comply.
Chairman, Representative Shoffler, it's all engines sold.
Okay, and then may I follow up, please? Now, the folks that still that maintain their engines well, you get a long life out of some of the older ones. Will they just, we're just hoping they fall out on by attrition, or will they still be able allowed to get parts? Will they be able to maintain those engines legally? Or will the vendors be not providing new parts for those engines? How's that going to work? Just from, and I know we went over it, but I can't remember what we did.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shoffler, they'll continue to be able to use those engines, and as far as I know, parts will still be manufactured for them or be available from inventory, as far as I know. But we do have a representative here from speak to one of the bills today who's from Stevens Marine, and he might be able to answer that further.
And very briefly, just so, thank you, Mr. Chair. I imagine they are gradually being phased out just by people, the customers and the users. And yeah, and so if you have any numbers showing that, because there's people that are really concerned about this, and if we could show them that that's gradually going to, eventually it'll be virtually zero, I think that would give them some, put them at ease a little bit. Maybe not.
That was my bill.
Yeah.
Oh, I just want to follow up because, as Don knows very well, we had a bill last session to provide incentives for expediting the transition to cleaner engines. That unfortunately didn't get funding, but it would be helpful to follow up on my colleague's comment to get an update on how that transition is going and what the Marine Board is doing to help facilitate the turnover to these cleaner engines, working with the private sector, obviously, closely. Thank you.
We'd certainly be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think that's many of the activities. And then I want to mention, and I'll cover it in the next page here, our Clean Marine Initiative that we're hoping to do this year. The Clean Marine Initiative, the goal of this is to promote best management practices, that word again, at marinas to prevent non-point source pollution. Currently, we're reviewing the programs of other states, notably Maryland, Connecticut, California, to try to pick the best elements of their programs for an Oregon-based program. We're doing this in cooperation with DEQ and the Oregon Coastal Zone Program. 2 years ago, they produced a handbook of best management practices, distributed it to marinas and boatyards, but there's been no follow-up on it since then. And so what we want to do is put some energy into that through outreach and education, working with marinas. We had a steering committee last week of public and private marinas. They're very enthusiastic about the prospects for this kind of initiative. And we think it's the way to go. So that's something that we're working on developing is an Oregon Clean Marina program.
Do you report this activity and the outcomes of it to OLEB or to anyone other than your own internal?
Mr. Chairman, this is a new program we haven't started yet, and it's certainly information that we'd be more than happy to share with OWEP or others, but it's still on the drawing boards. It's something that we're hoping to launch next year or after July.
I would editorialize a little bit here. Perhaps that in doing this, you come under the pretty much the statutes dealing with and creating the Oregon plan, and OEP would be, it would be appropriate and important that you communicate with them on the activities that you're involved in, and the outcome and results of those activities, sort of thing. That would be important for us in the legislature, since this committee, you know, currently has something of the oversight responsibility of the agencies dealing with the Oregon plan. And it is through OEP that we look principally or primarily to get the overviews, I think, of those things. So just a point of notation here that since it's a new program, they need to fit into our scheme a little bit.
Well, thank you. Quite well fit. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
please.
Thank you. So are you going to tack on to that invasive species, too? Because I'd imagine a lot of the species are being, you know, you go put your boat in, take it to marina, get serviced. There's a lot of places there. Something could spill into the water we don't want in the water. So will that be part of your initiative as well?
That I think, falls under some of the best management.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Really, the practices at marinas and boatyards touch on all aspects of you know, the boat, the humans. And
Well, just one comment,
as well,
please.
As species.
I mean, you say pollution, and I mean, invasive as species is pollution. I think you can argue that it is.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you.
And finally, I guess this wouldn't be complete unless I gave you a snapshot of our budget. This is the governor's recommended budget at a high level for 2005-07. Administration and education at about 17% of the overall agency budget, law enforcement at 41%, facility and grants at 42%. And I didn't plan on going a lot deeper than that unless the committee has questions.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Sarah. Does this include any fee bills that will be coming before us or not, what you have right there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swamp, we don't have any bills to increase agency revenue. We have one bill today dealing with the agent fee, which is not collected by the state.
Okay.
But, no, our budget is not based on any,
right,
any new fees or tax increases.
Okay, thank you.
Sam Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the $12 million there, that most for facilities, is that mostly dispersed out through to counties, cities, and port districts for to establish facilities for them and improve their facilities? Is that where most of that comes?
Chairman, Representative Brown, yes. Most of that is in the form of grants to local governments and other agencies for access. For example, right now we're working with Port Newport at the, on the reconstruction of the South Beach launch.
That's I don't know. The total bill, I think, is $1.2 million. I don't know how much of
you
guys got.
We're not into it for all that. We were going to replace much of that ramp anyway, and when the port came up with that project, they wanted to move it over. It was the same amount of money for us to either rebuild it where it was or move it. So,
good job.
Any other questions?
Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one. Could you give us the approximate breakdown between administration and education?
We don't account for them separately. I've got to give it to you in terms of employees. We have in education 5 persons working full-time in education. In registration, which is the biggest part of our agency, we have about a dozen staff members working there. And then there are 3 people, including myself, that work in overall administration. So,
The education part of it is probably third or last.
So if I could follow up. I'm getting into areas that I understand less, but it sounds like you're saying the back office has three people in it, and the front office has people who are actually doing registration work and doing education work. Is that a fair way to characterize what you just said?
Well, I have five people that are working full-time on education. About a dozen that work registration and that.
Right. And that's basically a clerical function?
Largely, yeah. Okay. And accounting, as well as accounting.
Thank you. That's helpful.
I'd be happy to get you a little better answer. That's not the most precise way to do it.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in the way of a comment, you have a relatively small agency. And because of the nature of where my district is at, I've had contacts with your agency several times and found them to be very responsive and very helpful.
Thank you.
You mean they have votes in your district?
A couple.
One or two.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. No other questions?
Appreciate your presentation, Paul, and we look forward to working with you. And at this time, we will close the informational meeting on the State Marine Board and open a public hearing on House Bill 2066. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2066 is pre-session filed at the request of the State Marine Board. It's increasing the service charge that the agents of the State Marine Board may impose for issuing temporary permits to operate a boat. This has a prior reference to Ways and Means, which the presenters will speak to about the possibility of rescinding.
Okay. And at this point, we have Greg Johnson and Paul Moyer. Are you
Mayor?
Yeah. Would you like to come up together? Okay. If he wants to. Good afternoon. Greg Johnson, please.
Yes, thank you very much for your consideration of House Bill 2066. My name is Greg Johnson. I'm director of the Portland Marine Dealers Association, which represents 70-plus marine-related businesses in the Portland metropolitan area. We requested this bill to recoup some of the costs associated with boat registrations and titling. There hasn't been an increase since the early 1980s. If you took inflation into account, it would be closer to $3.80 per transaction. So we feel that asking for $2.50 is not unreasonable. I'd like to also point out that the boat agents have to be bonded to supply this service, and that's $100 right there a year for the agents on that part of this program. Also, they have to provide this service to not only their customers, but to the public at large, so it is a public service. Thank you again for your consideration of House Bill 2066.
Okay. Are there questions for Mr. Johnson? You want us to raise the fee from $1 to, or the reimbursement at any rate, from $1 to $2.50?
Correct.
250% increase.
150%, Mr. Chair.
150%. Sounds to me like 2.5 times one is 250, but and you say it must be bonded. It costs you $100 to be bonded.
It costs your members. I am not myself a member,
yeah,
but
yeah.
the members, 100 members.
Yeah.
At a buck, that's so you got to deal with 100 votes just to recover your bonding cost.
That's correct, yes.
But you'd have to deal with 25 votes, or wait a minute, 25 votes to recover bonding costs under the other, is that?
Yes, correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. What would an average dealership, how many boats would an average dealership deal with on this, or average licensing agency deal with?
Some of the larger dealers during the busy period be between 50 and 75 a week.
50 and 7,500. Okay.
No.
Okay. 500.
No, it was, excuse me, was it 50 to 75?
I'm sorry. We don't really have accurate data on that, but I would estimate 50 a week.
Oh, 50 a week?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
This is a fee that you charge the private boat owners, or the boat dealerships charge the private boat owners for licensing or getting permits for their boat, right?
Correct, and titling.
And titling, yes. And then this is forwarded on to the Marine Board, then?
I'll let Mr. Mayor speak to that. He is actually administers this program with Stevens Marine.
Thank you for your time today.
Please. Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead. I'm Paul Mayer. I'm the president of the Portland Marine Dealers Association, as well as president of Stevens Marine. And on behalf of our 50 employees and the 70 members of the association, I'm here to speak on a consideration for House Bill 2066. In my written testimony, it indicates that the current agent fee to write a boat registration is $1. And as one of the state's largest marine dealers and a representative of the dealer body and what I believe the views of the marine retailers are, the majority of the registrations and titles we write are not for customers that we necessarily sell product to, but for a convenience for the public to come into our dealership and do registrations so they can get on the water at the time that they haven't dealt with it up front. Maybe they haven't sent their stuff in, and they come in and we provide the service for them so they can get on the water. That fee has been $1 since, I believe, 1980 or sometime in there. We have to hire specialized staff to do that separate, really, from the normal day-to-day operations because of the volume of it in the summertime. That person has certain batching and particular things that they have to present to the Marine Board in a certain way so that the issues don't come up later on for the customer after they you know get their tags and things like that. It involves communication back and forth with the Marine Board, phone calls with their people to deal with, you know, special things that may come up, death certificates that have to be, you know, presented properly if somebody passes away, how just the administration of it is done. The fee structure means that we're currently under means that we really operate at a loss in providing those services. And what we're requesting is something that would be closer to a break even, and if we looked at it, it would be maybe $5 per transaction in our dealership, and the number we deal with for the person that has to administer it, and we would, you know, be pleased to still provide the service because there is some benefit to us as a dealer having the customer come in our door, and that's why we're requesting $2.50. As far as, you know, how many per week, I can't speak to that because I don't have that particular data with me.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dinko.
Thank you. So I just want to clarify, so basically this cost increase would be to cover your administrative costs for providing this service. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's really an extension of the convenience thing for the Marine Board.
Okay. Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Which would be helpful, possibly, maybe the Marine Board can provide this. It would be helpful to me as a decision-maker to just have a better understanding, because I'm a floater, not a motorboater, so I fall in a category that doesn't have to register my kayak. However, it would be helpful for me to get a better understanding of how, of the data that the Chair requested, is how many of these types of services, how many transactions we're providing per week or per month or whatever, and I don't know if you have that data you can provide to us, and then where that money goes, how it's collected, you know, just having that information in front of us would be really helpful, maybe during work session on this bill.
Did you want to weigh in here?
Yes, sir. I was just waiting for permission. Clearance from the tower, as it were. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this like a... I guess I'm thinking about this as a fee that I would pay to a car dealer when I get a new rig for them to do the paperwork, right? Is that... That's all this is, right?
Yes.
Yes. That's all I have. I mean, they get $50 now to do that. You want $250?
We want $2.50.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perspective.
And I might remind Representative Dingfelder that it's perhaps within the purview of this committee to solve that problem of your not having to pay a fee for your kayak.
I'm certainly willing to discuss that, especially if it helps with maintenance of waterways, which I do support. I don't object to the increase. It would just be helpful for me to have more information, because this is just a new area that I haven't dealt with. Just a sense of how many of these licenses we're selling, and certainly I think $250 is a reasonable amount to provide that service.
I haven't come prepared with that data in particular, and I apologize for that. I could provide something to you that would help you, because we did a breakdown of that when we first analyzed it as many as 5 years ago when we initially were trying to work on getting this, you know, considered.
Representative Brown.
This has to cost you a great deal more than $250 form to fill these out and provide them. So it's got to be a service that you provide because of the industry that you're in, and no way can you be making any money on this.
It's certainly not a profit center for us.
That it would be helpful to know what the true costs are of providing the service.
Okay. And I'm not familiar with the format in which I would provide that if I haven't come prepared today. So maybe that's in trying to provide you with something.
Don can help you with that.
Tomorrow or something.
Yeah,
okay.
Don can help you with that.
Okay. Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the State Marine Board currently allow, or are you looking to, or is the Marine Board looking to allow for getting short licenses online and that sort of thing? If this is just for the temporary permit until the license actually arrives, is that, am I understanding correct?
This is typically something where a customer purchases a boat from private party out of the newspaper. They exchange titles and money, and they come in with a title and go, I want to use this boat that I just purchased, and I'd like to have somebody administer this for me. They come in with a title. We will do the function of writing a new title application that gives them a temporary, a new registration that gives them a temporary. We batch that up with all the proper documents per week and do an accounting of that and keep all those records ongoing, communicate with the Marine Board as to any issues that are involving this particular title that may occur, and then processing that for the customer so they can have a temporary to go on the water that day.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, follow-up.
Thank you. Then when a... So when a person gets the boat, or any time a boat changes hands, then it has to be re-registered, and new stickers have to be applied to the boat before it can be taken. So it's not like a car where you can just drive it off and go ahead and operate the car without with the current license on it?
There's two aspects of the process. First off is a title transfer, and the title transfer is simply an exchange of the old title for a new document that says they're the new owner. The other part of the transaction may be if they've purchased a boat that the tags have expired on and they have to add current tags or a current temporary registration, that would be the other part of that function.
Representative Chaffer.
Thank you. Is there a public office where people can go in and do this, rather, or is it just strictly through private vendors?
They can come to Salem.
That's the only place, excuse me. That's the only place in the state they can do it, in a public office, is in Salem?
As far as I know.
Do we get, you have a question?
Well, thank you.
Representative Brown.
And so if I got this straight now, we're paying you $250 to fill out some government forms for some customers. Do you think that we could put into statute some sort of limitation that my accountant can charge me for filling out my income tax? And would that be appropriate?
I'd like to comment on that. Actually, the government isn't paying us to do it. We're asking for the public to pay the fee for the convenience.
There you go. Right.
Isn't something that we're asking for the government to help, yeah, help fund.
Yeah, I misspoke. Sorry.
Other questions? Representative Thummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is probably more of a rhetorical question or a question to you if you'd care to field it, and that is, why don't we just put in there that Marina can charge a fee and let the market bear whatever the market will bear? Why do we have to put a cap on it? I mean, if Mr. Mayor can charge $50 to do this paperwork for a person, then let him. I don't care. And if some other marina wants to charge, $25 and undercut Mr. Mayor by half, fine. Let them figure it out by the market.
I'd like to. Am I able to comment on that a little bit?
Surely.
What we would hope for is to control the customer situation and make boating a positive experience, and not have them go to one place and find out that it's $30 and have already done the paperwork and paid $30, and then come in and find out that we charge $2.50. Because the goal is not to have the customer in any way taken advantage of, no matter where he goes, but to control, to the greatest degree we can, the consistency of the services offered to the customer, and not abuse them financially over something as simple as seemingly as simple as being able to go and use their boat. So as president of the Portland Marine Dealers Association, one thing that we're looking for is to more consistently control the experience the customer is going to have from cradle to grave as a boater, and make it as fun as possible, because that's what it is. It's a recreation. It should be fun and not something bad.
Okay. That makes sense.
Staff has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a point of clarification, I think you might have already answered it. So this isn't the registration fee, or the $2.50, isn't just for people that are buying the new boat, but you do the renewals also. So people in your area that want to do it right there on the spot, you'll just take them in off the street.
I'll give you an example, is that a customer thinks that they aren't going to go boating for the year, and all of a sudden there's a 90-degree heat wave, and they're sweltering in their apartment, and they go and hook onto their boat, and they go and look, it doesn't have tags. And without that tag, they can't enter the waterway without getting a ticket. And we want them to go boating. We want those revenues to come to the Marine Board, and so we want to make it convenient for them to be able to go to any place that does have the proper staff and the administration capabilities to provide proper information to the Marine Board. We want to make it as convenient as possible for them to pay the actual fee to use their boat to the Marine Board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? The two gentlemen? Thank you very much. I didn't know I was going to precipitate so much discussion by asking initial questions. Oh, I'm not through.
I'm actually enjoying it. So.
This is not a question, Mr. Chair. It's really a comment. I think when you're dealing with people who many of us, I think, have very little experience with this particular aspect of state government, and probably with others that we may hear. And so we're just making sure that we get the background in so that things that everybody knows, we also know. And I think that's what precipitated the questions we got earlier. I don't personally have any problem with this bill, but I am very appreciative of the questions that were asked, because if other people hadn't asked them, I would have had to.
You have a very alert committee members.
From our perspective, we appreciate the questions as well, because a lot of people in this room may or may not be voters, and if we can help you guys understand the challenges we have as retailers to continue to drive revenues into the state with sales of boats, sales of gasoline, sales of pop and sandwiches and everything else that goes along with boating, it's good for all of us. So,
thank you, gentlemen.
Excuse me.
Paul, Don Hefner again is wanting to...
Mr. Chair, while Paul's coming up here, just for the record, we also have written testimony from Clemens Marina Incorporated that we'd like to acknowledge into the record.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. You've already heard testimony in support of this bill. We introduced it at the request of the Portland Marine dealers to adjust their agent fee. We have 124 bonded agents statewide. They provide services for our customers across the state. Most of them are boat dealers or sporting goods stores. There were some questions regarding numbers, and I've included some of that in my testimony. Some of the small agents may process less than 100 transactions per year. The larger agents do over 1,000 transactions. The average is about 490 overall. That translates to about 60,000 transactions that agents process statewide each year. As you heard, they are required to maintain a $1,000 bond that costs them approximately $100 annually. And for that, with being an agent, they have to maintain an account for state funds, transfer legal documents, including titles, issue temporary permits. Some of the transactions can be time-consuming, particularly when boaters come in without all the documentation they need to complete a transaction in a timely fashion. Sometimes it involves calls back and forth to our office and other services. They do quite a bit of hand-holding with some of our customers. The fee was last adjusted in 1975 when it was set at $1. And if you apply an inflation calculator to a dollar from 1975, you do come up with a figure well in excess of $3.83 to be exact. During the summer months, as you heard, many of the agents are overwhelmed with people that wait till the last minute, wait till they're about to go on vacation, and then suddenly panic and have to go down and get current tags. Boat owners do have choices. They don't have to use the services of a registration agent. We do most of our transactions by mail. We also allow people to register or renew their registrations over the Internet, and that's becoming a very popular option. So in terms of being forced to pay the fee, there are other options, and the public doesn't have to use the services of an agent. It really is a convenience, and it's a convenience charge that they are charging for this service. We think it's a reasonable fee to adjust it up to $2.50. That seemed to be the consensus with the Portland Marine Dealers Association, and that's why we've established it at that. It seems reasonable and justified. The bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means because it had the word fee in it, and we've talked to the Speaker's office, explained that the state doesn't collect this money. It doesn't flow through our budget. It's not state revenue. And we would ask that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded if the committee wants to give favorable consideration to the bill, which we would ask for. Thank you.
Okay, Sean. Sure. Thank you. You know, I'm going to join my colleague here from Wilsonville. And if this is if you can go and get this through a public channel in good time and not pay an extra fee, then that's what I recommend people to do. But if this is a convenience that these nice people, and I believe it costs them a lot of money, I have no doubt in my mind, I believe a bit of that. If they're providing these folks with a convenience, you know what? Then let them charge it. Let them charge a charge. Let's just get rid of this and say, okay, if you want convenience, if you didn't get your job done, if you didn't get your paperwork done, you want to go boating right now, you know what? Pay these nice folks 25, 30, 40 bucks. Because I can just, the chair started off right on the money, in my opinion. This represents a 250% increase in a fee. And that's exactly how it'll be embraced by a lot of people in this state. And you're going to have to forgive me for being skittish, but the climate in this world is that. And I say, I agree with Representative Crummell. Just get rid of all this. Let the people providing this fee at great expense to them just charge a charge. Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the clarification, especially your comments about the convenience. I'm reading from lines 1 and 2 on page 2 of the bill. My impression from reading those lines and also from the nature of this is that this is not a fee in the normal sense, because fees in the normal sense get paid into the state treasury in some form or another. Rather, this is a charge for services in issuing a temporary permit, in which the state has undertaken to establish the maximum amount that our agent is allowed to charge for the agent's services. Is that the way you would characterize it, too, or have I missed it somehow?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, it's a ceiling on the fee that the agent is allowed to charge. And the agent is not required to charge the customer fee. If you buy a boat from a dealer and they want to sign you up for no charge, they certainly can do that. But it's setting a ceiling on it. It's akin, I guess, to the service charge that you pay when you buy a hunting or fishing license or tag. There's an agent fee that's assigned when you, it's an extra 50 cents for every tag you buy when you buy a hunting or fishing license. And it's to reimburse the vendor for their time and cost in performing a service, not only for the customer, but for the state. I mean, they're providing a service for us, too, in the sense that if our agency had to establish field offices around the state to make it convenient for people to do it in their local community, it would be far more expensive for us to do that than to employ the services of an agent, which is why agents came to be. And it's why my agency only has one office here in Salem, and we're not planning on getting any bigger than we currently are. So it's it really is a service for the public that they're providing, and this is to compensate them for that.
Right. Excuse me, Representative, if I may. As I'm, I assume you're talking about lines 1 and 2 on the second page of the...
Correct.
If I read that, it sounds to me like we're not identifying this as a fee. It says, in addition to the prescribed fees, $2.50 per transaction for their services in issuing the temporary permit.
It's a service fee.
Right, and Mr. Chair, in fact, on the relating clause describes it as increases service charge that agents may impose for issuing temporary permit. I think that accurately describes what we're talking about here. It isn't really a part of the state's fees at all. And I think that's important as we talk about this. This is, if anything, if I may, I'd like to ask one more question. Do you know the history of this provision and the dollar limit that we have now? Do you know why that came about?
Representative Barnhart, the Marine Board has had boat registration agents since its early days. We were created in '59, and we've had agents since the 1960s. The original fee was 50 cents for an agent fee. In 1975, it was bumped up to a dollar, and it was made to be a per-transaction fee, because sometimes people would come in with, you know, multiple transactions. Right. They want multiple permits, and the old fee was just 50 cents flat. And so now if you come in, you've got two boats or three boats, and you want to do them all at once, it's a dollar per transaction, and this would be $2.50 per transaction as well. So it's been a long time. You know, the agents have been a very good way for us to do business, and it's been a good partnership between the state and small businesses to do this. And we thought this was a rather simple bill just to recognize that, rather simple bill to recognize that, you know, there's inflation and we need to adjust to the times. And
well, before we got here today, I thought it was a simple bill too, along with the chair.
But I've learned there's no such thing as a simple bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not going to simplify it anymore now either for you. You know, what we're doing is forcing these vendors to do our paperwork for us, essentially, is what we're doing, at for a dollar a pop. You know, if I owned a marina and I was selling new boats, I would advertise the fact that if you come in here, we're going to waive your fee for doing all this paperwork. And if we're going to force small business to do our work for us, and I agree it's a good setup, because they sell fishing license and stuff too, you know, then we ought to just say, okay, you can go ahead and charge to be reimbursed for that work. I don't know why we ever put a 50 cent or a dollar or $2.50 on it in the first place. I don't understand. And I'm sorry if I'm complicating the issue here, but I honestly believe a 250% hike in anything is going to be unacceptable for me in all likelihood. So thank you.
I would also remind the committee that there's a statement in the bill, section 10, that says the agent may charge.
Right.
Does
not
say
force.
Shall charge.
Force anybody to charge anything.
So any out-competing marina that wants to undercut their neighbor down the river, you know, may do so, apparently, if I read this bill correctly.
Register any boat for a dollar.
This is just crazy.
You're right, it is.
It's a courtesy. It's not like with the permission of the chair. It's just a courtesy. It's not. I mean, they're doing the paperwork for you. Don't pay the buck. Just, you know, go to Salem if you live in the Grand and tow your boat to Salem and then go back. And, I mean, really, give me a break.
What if I live in Newport?
Well, then you take your boat out of the water, Mr. Chair, and bring it down to Detroit Lake.
Sorry, Don. Please go ahead.
Paul,
I'm sorry.
Well.
Thank you.
Just one last observation regarding, you know, the uniform application of this, and a concern that we would have with some kind of a free market system is that, you know, if you're a customer of that particular business, they may give you a very good rate on getting it done, and someone else walks in and they might not be as accommodating, and then we're going to hear those, mm-hmm. you know, those complaints from the public. So I guess from a public perspective, we would advocate for a uniform fee across the board, so that it's a level playing field and everyone knows what to expect when they go into an agent. There's no surprises and no unhappy customers.
Mr. Chair, one more question, and I'll shut up. I promise. Thank you for being
on this the rest of the committee.
Thank you for indulging me. And look, I understand where you're coming from. My question is, and maybe this is for Fish and Wildlife, but you know, we how much do we pay? Do you have any idea how much we the vendor who like if I go to Fred Meyer's and buy my fishing license, and it's always at the last minute, by my dad. I usually get a day permit, which ends up costing me more money in the long run. But well, how much do they get reimbursed per transaction? Do you have any? Is there a comparable system there?
Go ahead, Paul.
I don't know the fee, but I
no.
John?
To the State your name for the record also.
For the record, my name is Paul Mayer. I don't know what the fee is for that, but I do know that when I go there, and it's automated. So what happens is that they just simply enter your Social Security number or your license number, and it just happens. So there isn't the processing of the additional paperwork. I have been in the business for about 24 years now, and I was part of when they had that the change of the dealer charge that they may charge, and I think that his agency would probably get a lot of telephone calls if we had kind of a free market system where we could charge $30 if we felt like it, or another dealer could charge, you know, whatever he wanted to, and maybe they go in one place and it's $2 and it's $30 here. Pretty soon, I would guess Paul's agency would get a phone call saying, you know, my neighbor just did it here for this much. How come that's allowed?
I think we'll end this discussion on this particular bill. I just might offer one suggestion that as the folks out there in the community talk about this, you probably make it easier for the legislators if you talk about it as a service charge, not as a fee.
Thank you for your advice.
It is, in fact, a dirty word in this building. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2066 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2084. And I've just thrown my staff a curveball because... Oh, okay. And we have Paul. Do you want to go first? We have Bob Reese here, who came from an extra over 100 miles. And our preference is always to give you, if you're from out of the area, that far out of the area, the first, in case you choose to leave earlier. And then we'll have Paul Don Heffner again. Go ahead, both of you. You'd be Paul Rainey then, someplace there?
Yes, I am. Okay. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Paul Rainey. I'm here with Bob Reese to testify in support of House Bill 2084 on behalf of the Oregon Guides and Packers Association. The Oregon Guides and Packers Association is a nonprofit trade organization of nearly 150 professional outdoor recreational service providers and their affiliates. Our guides and outfitters are committed to helping outdoor enthusiasts from all walks of life to have a safe and rewarding outdoor experience here in Oregon. Our members and their respective businesses serve every region of the state, from our salmon-rich coastal waters to the game-abundant high desert of Oregon's rugged eastern regions. Whether you're new to the woods and waters or a seasoned outdoor person, OGPA outfitters and guides can help you appreciate the natural wonders of our diverse and spectacularly scenic state. House Bill 2084 gives us the opportunity to work with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife on the issue of reciprocity on the Columbia River. This bill will give the Oregon Marine Board the flexibility they need to represent the best interests of Oregon's guides and outfitters. As one of the guides who is frequently out on the Columbia River and understands this issue in great detail, I'd like to ask Bob Reese to share his insight about working on the Columbia River.
Good afternoon, Chair and Representatives. My name is Bob Reese. I'm president of the Northwest Guides Association. And I represent some Lower Columbia River charter operators and professional fishing guides, and as well as some other businesses in that area. We support this bill. I talked at length with Director Don Heffner about this bill, and to us it seems mostly like a housekeeping type of bill that allows the State Marine Board to negotiate with the state of Washington on regulations regarding commercial carrying vessels in the Lower Columbia River. We currently operate as if this regulation was already in place. We fish both sides of the river on the Oregon side and the Washington side down in the estuary. And our hope is that we can do that under legal status now. Apparently, I didn't understand that technically it's not legal, although there clearly is no enforcement on this issue down there. So our goal is, of course, to support the Oregon State Marine Board in this bill. The Oregon State Marine Board and fishing guides and charter boat operators have a great relationship. I think that we work really good together, and they provide a very great service for us, and we appreciate what they do. The one thing that does have a concern for the people that I represent is that the state of Washington currently has a limited entry program for their charter vessels down there. And we believe that the Oregon State Marine Board doesn't support this type of legislation. It's not at all mentioned in this particular bill, but we want to ensure as an industry that sort of legislation does not take place and would probably be incorporated in some of the negotiations with the state of Washington. But it is critical for us to maintain a quality service in our industry that we do not have a limited entry program for charters or guides at this time. And that is the one concern that we may have with this particular bill, and I just wanted to get on record stating that that's critical for us to operate the quality service that we do, that we do not have a limited entry in the guides and charter program through Oregon State Marine Board. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Representative Brown.
And so now that it doesn't go both ways, and Washington has reciprocity and recognizes Oregon, but Oregon doesn't recognize Washington.
Well, I think Director Don Hefner would have the absolute answer to that. The way I understand it is that what is pretty clear is that as a sport angler, that reciprocity takes place. As a commercial operator in the Columbia River, it is not law in that sense, but it is understood. I mean, we don't have any personal issues with we don't have conflicts in that realm down in the estuary, and I don't think there ever will be. But like I mentioned before, I think this is kind of a housekeeping bill, and I think it just would allow us by law to operate on both sides of the river. Did I answer your question?
Follow up. I was thinking that says that Washington laws are very similar to what Oregon is, and that they recognize, Washington, state of Washington now recognizes what Oregon does, and so what is it that Oregon doesn't recognize what Washington?
Why don't we hold that question for Paul when he comes up again?
This is true.
Representative Brown.
Okay.
All right. Is that right? Wait till Paul comes up. We'll answer that.
Yeah.
To deal with that question.
Other?
Actually, I have one question, Mr. Chair. I'm curious if this is ever an issue down in the Klamath with California outfitters for any trips, and I don't know if you can answer that, but I'm just curious what our reciprocity is with California. And that's probably, you guys, if you're guiding in Washington and Idaho, it's probably not an issue, but curious if it ever comes up in the Klamath.
Yeah, I don't have any members down in the southern part of the state. I can't answer that question.
Okay.
Again, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Paul. Maybe Paul can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming. We appreciate your testimony. Paul Von Hefner.
Hard to read.
Yeah. It's confusing the way it's written. It's a legal use.
Chairman, members of the committee, Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. I'd like to start off by answering the question on the Klamath, if I may.
Please.
We don't have a problem with California in the sense that we don't have any waters that make up the state boundary down there. So you're either in California or you're
Oregon.
In Oregon. We introduced,
we are so far fortunate that the Columbia River doesn't
border California. Take all the water.
Yet, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Figure that one out.
Yeah. Please, I'm sorry.
I did say Klamath.
I know.
This is an agency bill, and we're trying to address a situation with the state of Washington regarding reciprocity on the Columbia River. The bill does address Idaho, but we don't have any issues with the state of Idaho. The current statute was adopted in 1995, and it provides for reciprocity on the Columbia River for Washington outfitters and guides, provided that Washington does the same for our people. The catch is that Oregon's law required Washington to adopt mandatory liability insurance and first aid training provisions, which their legislature has not done. The goal of reciprocity was good, and for the period up to from 1995 to 2002, basically we didn't bother Washington guides, and their people didn't bother our folks. We were under the mistaken impression that we had reciprocity. But in 2002, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife did some research and digging into their laws and our laws, and came to the conclusion that there's a discrepancy, and being that they don't have insurance or first aid training, that there is no such thing as reciprocity between our two states for guides. So we don't have reciprocity right now. Now, for charter boats operating on the lower Columbia River up to Longview Bridge, the problem there is that Washington never adopted rules recognizing an Oregon charter boat or guide registration to be equivalent to their charter boat license. Based on Washington law, we think that they can solve that problem through their administrative procedure. Because there's no insurance requirement or no first aid requirement for the charter boats, and both our people have insurance, they can solve that through their administrative regulations. But for guides elsewhere on the Columbia, above Longview, it's not that easy, because Washington does not have liability insurance and first aid in their statute. So they can only do that through legislation, which so far they've not done. We met with officials from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife in 2003 to try to sort this through, and the bottom line is that they probably have authority to do the charter boat issue, but they haven't acted on that. I spoke with them again last week. I believe they're now willing to consider those rules to recognize our charter boats and perhaps guides as well below Longview Bridge. But unless Oregon acts to drop its insurance and first aid requirement, or Washington adopts it on their side, it's going to be difficult to achieve reciprocity for the rest of the river. I would ask the committee to consider whether Oregon needs to insist on liability insurance and first aid training for Washington guides operating on the Columbia River above Longview. Or should we simply recognize a Washington business license for what it is, and on the Columbia River allow a person with a legitimate Washington license to operate on either side of the river in return for allowing Oregon guides to operate on either side of the river with a valid Oregon license? Oregon law requires both resident guides and charter boats to carry liability insurance. We don't require Washington charter boats to carry insurance as a condition of reciprocity here, but we do require it of guides. So we've got an inconsistency there in how we're treating two very similar occupations. They're both essentially the same. In the one case, we allow Washington charter boats to come into Oregon waters without insurance, but we won't allow guides to come into Oregon waters without insurance. And so there's dissimilar treatment there. For the last 2 years, we've had a standoff where we've not been able to resolve it, and therefore both agencies have asked law enforcement on both sides to just basically stand down. We both recognize that this is not the best way to deal with it, hence this bill. The language in the bill was recommended by legislative counsel as a means of giving our agency more flexibility through the administrative rule process to adopt what is reciprocity or what is not reciprocity, but it still has the language in there, still has the first aid liability insurance requirement. So I'm afraid even with that administrative flexibility, we may be stuck in the position of not being able to recognize Washington if they don't act on that insurance and first aid training. So the bill doesn't solve the problem entirely as it was drafted. And again, I would like to ask the committee to consider whether that requirement for Washington guides to carry insurance and first aid is necessary to protect Oregon's interests or our residents or to promote a level playing field. We've had Washington guides operating on the Columbia, both sides of it, since 1995. As far as I know, there's been no harm done, no complaints, no adverse impacts to that. So if we were to simply recognize a Washington guide license for what it is, provided they recognize ours, I think we could solve this and declare victory and go home. If we were to insist on reciprocity for our charter boats and guides below Longview and in turn ease up a little bit on the first aid and insurance, I think we could quickly come to a resolution of this with Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Sure. Representative Schaffner. I've enjoyed charters on both sides of the river, and I hope I do the rest of my life. My question is, can you explain to me exactly what this liability that we have, that we insist on our folks in Oregon having, covers, and what it then that would tell me what is not being covered if I'm a consumer, I'm getting some kind of coverage here in Oregon. What is that I'm not getting in Washington?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schlaffer, in Oregon, guides carry $300,000 worth of liability insurance, and they have to furnish proof of first aid training. So if you're on a guide or a charter boat trip in Oregon and you're injured somehow, there may be money there. From that guide's liability insurance policy if the guide's responsible for your in some way for your injuries. Now in Washington they don't require that, so you'd have to you'd still go after the guide civilly, and depending on how you view insurance, they're either running a business without any kind of coverage, which probably isn't a very smart thing to do.
May I follow up on that, Mr. Chair? One more question, please. Is there a number? I'd imagine there's a percentage. For example, if I lived in Washington and I had a charter boat, my wife wouldn't let me go out and run business without being some insurance. Are there those in Washington that do voluntarily carry it or not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schlaffer, I would imagine that anyone that had any kind of assets that would want to carry insurance.
Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With particularly on the Lower Columbia, how does this fit with Coast Guard regulations that might be required of the charter fishing industry or the guiding industry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, well, all of these operators, whether they're charter or guide, carry a Coast Guard motorboat operator's license. And then depending on the number of passengers that they're carrying, the boat may or may not be inspected. Generally, six passengers or less are uninspected, and those carrying more than that would be subject to Coast Guard inspection. Those rules would be uniform in both states.
Follow up. But there's no insurance requirement under Coast Guard regulations. So.
No, the Coast Guard does not require insurance.
Okay. Any additional training that we may do in Oregon that they do in Washington that's required by the Coast Guard?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, no, there's no additional training except for first aid. Oregon does require first aid of our guides, but not for charter boats.
Thank you.
Representative Dinkfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I still have some questions about this bill, and I want Phil to sort of have a heart attack back there. But I guess the question I have and maybe this is something I just am not understanding, is I just don't understand why are we promoting lowering the bar in Oregon to get reciprocity. I mean, I'm totally supportive. I want to support our small fishermen and guides and charter boat companies. But I guess the question is, it's sounding to me that because Washington doesn't want to require liability and first aid, then you're recommending that we lower the bar to be consistent, that we don't require it either.
No,
and I guess I'm a little concerned about that. It doesn't make sense to me. Am I interpreting that wrong? Okay, so I'm interpreting that wrong.
Body language, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative,
help me understand this.
No, let me help you understand that. We're not proposing to lower the bar for Oregon guides or Oregon charter boats. What we're suggesting is that right now, the law reads that in order for us to recognize a Washington guide, Washington has to require their people to have insurance and first aid. And what we're suggesting is we could eliminate that insistence that Washington do something of their people. It wouldn't necessarily lower the bar for Oregon guides or Oregon charter boats. We're not eliminating a requirement in Oregon. We're simply saying we will recognize a Washington business license to carry people fishing as okay for the purposes of the Columbia River only. And I think it's important that we're only talking about the Columbia here, not elsewhere. So if a Washington guide wants to fish elsewhere in Oregon, they have to comply with Oregon's registration, insurance, first aid training, the whole thing.
So, follow up. So we're making an exception for the Columbia, basically, is what we're doing. I mean, I just want to make sure that the public knows. I mean, if somebody goes and gets a Washington guide and they know that there's not the same requirements as an Oregon guy. I mean, I'd certainly want to know if I was going out for the reasons that I want to make sure. You know, I don't want to be on a Washington boat if I have a heart attack. I'm going to tell you that right now. I want to know somebody knows CPR that I'm going out with. So I guess I'm just concerned to make sure that we're doing our due diligence here. And I'm sure it's a small percentage, and I would imagine most of the guides probably do know CPR and have first aid training anyway. But I just want to make sure we're not jeopardizing anybody who decides to, you know, use a Washington guide versus an Oregon.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused, and let me just recite what I think this bill does from having read it just today, and then ask you a question about that understanding. It appears to me, if I look at lines on page 1, lines 24 through 27, the bill actually removes the specific requirement that the state of Washington adopt legislation to establish minimum requirements in the area of first aid training and liability insurance coverage. In the draft also, in the language in lines 20 and 21, lines 18 and 19, we require that the licensing, permitting, or registration requirements in Washington are, and here's the word, here's the key word, comparable
mm-hmm.
to those of Oregon. Now, if I understand what your testimony is that your understanding is that the Marine Board is going to interpret this bill and the word comparable as mean, and with the removal of the language about the specific language about insurance and first aid training, as meaning that comparable doesn't include insurance and first aid training, if I've understood the essence of what you're saying. I think that's a yes or a no, and if it's a no, then you can explain more.
Good question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think you have it right, but the concern that we have is that comparable, can we truly say that it's comparable if we require insurance and first aid training and they don't? Have we just simply put ourselves into an administrative rule process where we really can't get to yes because there's no way that you could say it's comparable?
Mm-hmm.
Well, or help me out. If we could find it to be comparable without insurance and first aid, then my concerns are ill-founded.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I would have a similar kind of question. Now, you know, I'm sure a smart lawyer can make the argument that this change means the legislature no longer intended that Washington had to have insurance and first aid training, because it removed the language in lines 24 through 27, and particularly put in that word comparable. I suppose you could argue that this is a part of the definition of comparable. That's not part of it. I would share your concern about this, and I wonder, given what you've said you want, if this is the vehicle to get you there or if it requires an amendment in order to get you there. Maybe that's a better question than the one I actually asked before.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I believe it would require an amendment to make it clear.
And then a final, if I may. Thank you. As I read this bill, it appears to me as though it actually applies to three situations. The first one is the boundary between Oregon and Washington, where the Columbia River is the boundary. The second one is the Snake River, where the river is the boundary between Oregon and Idaho. And the third one is some kind of a repeat of the first one. Can you explain how Section 2 and Section 1 are different? I'm sure they are. I just don't understand it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, Section 1 deals with guides between Oregon and Idaho. Section 2 deals with charter boats.
Charter boat. Thank you. That answers my question.
Representative, I need unanimous consent to allow Representative Shopko to retract his one time.
No, that was the last bill, wasn't it?
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't want
I beg you indulge me.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't want him to explode.
I won't. Thank you.
My generous I'm holding it all in.
You know, I want to get to yes on this. But you know what? I have to ask myself, this could have easily went through business, labor, consumer affairs, because we're protecting the consumer, theoretically. I mean, I have to ask myself, I'm a general contractor, although I'm going to be inactive soon because I'm so busy doing this. If we passed a law that said Oregon contractors have to have liability insurance, but Washington contractors coming down here to do stuff don't, I can just imagine what the public would, how they would respond to this. Now, and I really don't see these nice folks that I trust, and I'm sure they're in seaworthy vessels and care about their job. They love their job, and they do it well. But they're coming down here and trying to get providing a much wanted and demanded service to our consumers of this state, and I'm having a problem with allowing a contractor to contract in this state without the same requirements as other contractors in this state. And you've addressed it very well. This is a problem, and I'm just kind of struggling. But I would like to get to yes, but I can't say that I'm there yet. So, and maybe my analogy somehow breaks down, but in a pure sense of the word, I don't think it does. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Representative. We have one more bill. We don't want to slide it. I'm going to sum up or close the discussion on House Bill 2084. But I'm going to pose first thing, I do have some legal questions I need to have answered with this, and I will consult with legislative counsel before we get ready to go to work session on it and possibly have them in to talk about that. Secondly, as an issue, I'd like to ask the State Marine Board to think about the potential addition of a sunset on this to give the legislature a chance to look at it, and especially look at this comparability in terms of reciprocity between the two states, that we're not treating one differently than the other after Washington has had a chance to see what we've done. I'm not interested in discussion now on that because I'd like to move on to the next topic, but that will be a topic that I think I will want to possibly entertain before we go to work session on the bill. And I think we'll be in touch with the department before we get there because I don't think we'll want to spend any much more time on this bill. Not that it doesn't deserve all the time that we, you know, but I wouldn't want to delay it in the first work session because I didn't have an amendment here. So we'll be in touch with you on that issue before we come back to this bill. And with that, then, we'll close the public hearing on 2084 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2267. And Paul, you're apparently on the appetite, so thank
you, Mr. Chairman. This is my last bill today.
Until the Senate transportation?
Until Senate transportation at 3 o'clock. No, this is 3 or 4 today. I hope this one will be a little easier. For the record, I'm Paul Don Heffner, Director of the Marine Board. House Bill 2267 truly is a housekeeping bill. It was prepared for introduction by the Office of Legislative Counsel to fix a problem in ORS 830.015, which deals with the applicability of various boating laws to different types of vessels. And I would direct your attention to a letter attached to my testimony from the Coast Guard. I think it helps to explain it quite well. The need for this bill came to light last summer when the Oregon State Police had a case down in Curry County involving boating under the influence and reckless operation. It was a case involving a documented vessel, and the judge hearing the case considered dismissing it because of the language in 830.015, which appeared to exclude this type of vessel from our boating laws, which was a puzzlement to us. That case ended up being resolved through a plea bargain, but the further we looked at it and discussed it with legislative counsel, the more we agreed that we had a problem that needed to be fixed. As I explained in my testimony, there are two ways of proving ownership of a vessel in Oregon. You can title the boat and get a certificate of number, or you can document it. Documentation is functionally the equivalent of a title. It's just a different means of proving ownership. And as I mentioned earlier today, generally documentation is limited to boats over 6 tons. And that document is issued by the U.S. Coast Guard. They issue ship's documents. We issue titles. It's simply a method of listing ownership. It has nothing to do with the application of equipment requirements or operating requirements to a boat. And that's where 830.015 throws us a curve. And we don't know how it happened, but somehow 830.015 is out of sync with federal laws that govern boating. As the Coast Guard pointed out, both documented and undocumented or titled vessels are subject to the same legal requirements. The Coast Guard has put us on notice that the current statute puts us in technical noncompliance with the requirement to have our boating laws consistent with federal law in order to qualify for Coast Guard grants. And since those grants provide about $2.3 million each biennium for our budget for marine law enforcement, or about 20% of that program's funding, we don't in any way want to jeopardize those funds, and so cleanup of this statute is essential. Council has rearranged 830.015 to be easier to read. It uses a few less double negatives in there. And as amended, it would bring documented vessels under the basic state boating laws that relate to equipment and operating requirements consistent with federal law. So we would ask your support for this bill.
Thank you, Bob. Questions?
Sure. Mr. Brown.
Paul, is this wording in this acceptable to the Coast Guard now? Will it meet what they're saying that we need to fix?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, yes. We ran the LC past them, and they're okay.
Questions?
Well,
Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just to make sure I understand. It looks to me as though what this change does is basically say we don't really care how your ownership is documented. You got to follow equipment requirements and various other safety requirements of the state of Oregon, regardless. If that's what this change means.
Mr. Chair.
And the law, the way it existed before, actually exempted some boats from that because of the way they were documented.
Mr. Jensen, Representative Warren, yes.
Thank you.
Hearing no other other questions, we are adjourned.